C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the f*** does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And welcome back to the C Word Radio. Joining me today to share her experience of being diagnosed with sarcoma at 9 and then going through cancer for a second time at 17 is Susan Harworth. Susan joins us from Hamilton, and she's had a bit of a strange experience with a cat burglar this morning. Thank you so much for joining me, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me on here, Helen. And yes, I definitely thought I had a burglar in my house last night, but it was a stray cat. So I'm very blessed that it was a stray cat rather than a burglar. I really appreciate you having me on here today to talk about my journey with cancer, both as a child and a teenager.
Yeah, it's really interesting, I guess, reading that experience that, you know, as a 9-year-old going through that, which I imagine would have been huge. And then as a teenager, and they're both such, yeah, shaping times in a person's life. And so I know that how you came to be diagnosed is that you started having that pain in your right arm. As a 9-year-old, what do you remember about being told you have cancer or had cancer?
I think the pain started during a Christmas holiday. We, as a family, we used to spend every holiday at Mount Linoi, and I remember just playing outside with my brothers. I think we got, for Christmas, we got one of those games where you throw the ball and it hits the Velcro type thing. So, yeah. So I just remember, like, playing with that, and I just remember going to Mum, you know, her first thought was, oh, have you fallen over? Have you hurt yourself? Have you exerted yourself too much? Like, maybe just sit down and, you know, have a rest, good old mum. And it sort of then phased off. And then about 4 months later, I just remember saying the same thing to my mum. And, you know, at first she sort of thought, oh, I wonder if she's going to growing pains. You're still growing at that time of your life. And it was only until she looked a little bit closer and saw that there was a bump on my arm. And that was sort of the true indication that something wasn't quite right, and straight to emergency. And the only time that I'd ever been in a hospital prior to this experience was the passing of my grandfather. So to me, you know, hospitals were a place where you went in and you didn't come out. And so I just remember having this thought process and being very wrapped up in the point that I was going in, but I wasn't coming out of that place. So it was quite frightening at the time, not really knowing what's going on. And 30 years ago, technology wasn't quite the same. And so Waikato Hospital didn't have half of the things that we needed to be able to diagnose, didn't even have an MRI machine 30 years ago. So, yeah, so there was a lot of tests and a lot of discussions, because the type of cancer that I had can be quite rare, and so they weren't actually really sure what they were dealing with for quite a long time. And it was only until I went to Auckland and had that MRI that it was very, very clear that I had bone cancer. So that's sort of how it all came to be, and then the journey unfolded really from there.
So you had a year of chemotherapy, you're in and out of hospital, and then radiation. I mean, that's huge in anyone's life. It's huge as an adult, as a child. I mean, that experience must have been so far removed from what your friends and schoolmates were going through. What was it like going back to school after all of that had happened?
I think for me as well, because obviously it's not just the emotional changes, it's the physical as well. I lost all my hair, you know, children don't understand a lot. So, you know, going back to school, there was a lot of bullying, not necessarily coming from a cool space. It's a lack of understanding. And so I was really, really blessed to be in a ward at Waikato Hospital with such amazing staff who actually came down to my school and actually in an assembly talked about what cancer is and how they can talk to me and support me. But as I said, I think it came down to more of a lack of understanding. And once they did, things really changed. Like, people wanted to help, the empathy came out. But I was very isolated as well, because if a child was sick at school, I wasn't able to attend. So the parents had to be notified, you know, letters had to go out that if your child is unwell, please notify us so we can let this family know, because your immunity is next to nothing. And so the risk of getting sick is, yeah, very, very high. So, yeah, you sort of lost a lot of schooling at that time as well. Hospital had an amazing school teacher, but you definitely felt removed and almost felt like you lost a year of school. And it was a year before you went into intermediate. So it was that big transitional time as well, where you're just about to leave primary school and it's all big and scary. But not only like, did I have to deal with that, I was also, you know, fighting for my life at the same time. So, yeah, it definitely had some challenges going back to school. But overall, once the understanding was there, my friends and the children were really, really amazing. And so were the teachers. So, yeah, I was really blessed in that way.
And you said something there that, I mean, even as an adult, I know for myself, you're fighting for your life. And as an adult, that is a lot to take in and understand and process. Were you aware of that at the time? Was that something that was in your head?
Absolutely. I think the doctors are very real and open with children. I mean, as much as you can. But the thing I think that made me more aware was that I was not in hospital alone. I was with other children that were also going through the same journey. And so you become a community. I was also very involved with Child Cancer Foundation at the time. So you are spending a lot of your time with other children who are going through the same thing. So obviously, it came to a time where I did lose quite a lot of friends, and you're having to deal with it at such a young age. And I felt sometimes I was going to more funerals than I was birthday parties. And so it's really real. It's very confronting. And you have to grow up really, really fast, because, you know, that the whole funeral process isn't just attending. It's when you're friends with that person and you're part of their lives, you know, you're going. And it was also a multicultural experience. I was going to a lot of tangis at a young age. And so, you know, I was part of that process. You're seeing people who've passed away in caskets really young. And so it made me really grow up very, very fast, because I was having to deal with death at such an early age and having to understand what it meant. So, yeah, at times it was extremely sad, but it's also sort of shaped who I am today as well. It's really helped me like grow from a very young age as to how lucky we are.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a huge thing. And then I didn't realize until I read your story a second time that when it came back, it was the radiation induced, because I remember having radiation and treatment and things, and they sort of mentioned that, you know, there's a slim possibility that your treatment could cause it, and it just doesn't even really come into your head that fear of reoccurrence is a thing. And so for you, it's come back, you're 17, but now it's not just radiation and chemo, you're having parts of your body removed and a metal prosthesis. So what was going on at the time? Are you deciding where to go to uni at 17? Or?
Yeah, so, gosh, I was 17, I was sixth form. So it was a year before my last year. And like you say, you know, you always get told there's a slim chance of something. But after 8 years, after the five-year mark, you sort of feel like, yeah, you're in the clear. And so after 8 years, you know, it is quite a shock to the system, not just to you, but all your specialists are like, wow, we didn't see this coming. And so you're at a different level of your life now. You know, at 17, you're learning and seeing the world in so many different, you know, when you're a child, it's all about play and imagination. And when you're 17, we're going to school balls and we're dressing up, and sometimes there's a boy there that you might have a crush on, you know, and there's image and there's so many other things that you're having to worry about. And so for me, it was a transition. Well, okay, this has happened. what do I do now? And it was my, it would have been my last year of high school, which I missed. So what do I do now? But as I said, I, at that time, all I could think about was what's the next steps? Like it's one foot in front of the other. I couldn't think about my future at that time or, you know, what am I going to do? I actually had left school at the end of sixth form to start. So I'd already started a polytech course when this happened. So, and I was so excited. I was in an adult world because polytech, you know, you sort of feel like you're starting like new. So unfortunately that got put on the side, and yeah, my journey started again with cancer, but at a whole different level. I think once you've had it once, there are so many things that you can't have, or you get told by your specialist the risks with this. And so it's not a brand new thing anymore, but it's also a slightly scarier situation because it's like, while you've had it twice, the levels of survival do get lessened. And you're more aware as well. Like as a child, I was aware to a point, but this is real now. And so I think being a 17-year-old with everything else in the background, and then now this, yeah, as I said, it was just one foot in front of the other.
How did your friends react? Were they supportive? Did you find that they, I mean, it's hard to understand anything when you're 17, let alone.
Yeah. But I'm really blessed to have had the same friends since I was at primary school. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I've obviously gained friends as I've gone through life as well. So at the time, I found it very hard to tell people who hadn't known before. I sort of felt like as growing up, I didn't want to be labelled as the girl with cancer. And so it wasn't something I proactively went out and said, hi, my name is Susan and this is my experience. I sort of waited until I got to know the people and then I would share it. Yeah, a lot of my friends were quite shocked. They actually didn't even know that I'd had cancer when I was 9. So trying to sit, you know, 16, 17-year-old girls and boys down and say, hey, this is what's happening with me. No, they were amazing. Like, they were still going through school. And so they were coming up to hospital after the school. And, like, you know, times where they probably should have been doing their homework or their study, been sitting with me and keeping me company. And I'm so appreciative of that. And some people don't know what to say. I think it's that, how do we approach this? So there was a lot of almost silence from some of my friends as well, because it's almost like when someone passes away, you know, and you're trying to console a family member or a friend and you've never been through that experience. I mean, none of my friends have really known anyone that has had cancer. So do I say this? Do I don't? You know, am I being sensitive? Am I not? And for me, I just wanted to be normal. Like, well, what is normal in the scheme of things? And I think that's purposely why I never really went on and on about my cancer as a 9-year-old, because I just, when I meet people, I just want to be known as me. I didn't want to have this stigma or label that this is who I was. And it's only as I've come into an adult space that I've actually really owned it and been like, you know what? I'm not going to hide behind the word cancer anymore and almost make it feel like a shameful word, because it's not. It's an experience I've been through, and it's something I'm actually really proud of in a sensible way. It's not an achievement that you want to sort of, yay, but it's an achievement in itself that I can openly talk about my story now like I am with you and not have that, like, almost shame or fear. And so, I'm just owning it now, and that's taken a very long time to really accept, because you just constantly are trying to show people, this is who I am. I'm not the big C, but I'm just Susan. Like, and this is just what I've gone through. But now as an adult, I can't wait to share my story, because if I can help anyone else, or if I can make someone, you know, have a bit more knowledge about what it's like to have cancer, and then their family member or their friend, and they know just a little bit more about it or how to deal with it, then yeah, I feel like my job's done, if that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was a human.
And I imagine as well, because I know that, you know, you had to have some of your humerus bone removed and you've got a bionic so to speak. And so I relate to this by having a scar that, you know, and I have a breast missing. So it's not like I can't forget I had cancer, because there's like this physical reminder. How has that post-treatment life been for you? How has it changed the way that you approach life going through cancer the second time?
Yeah, I think for me that has been my biggest challenge and my biggest hurdle was the physical elements. And like you said, it's a constant reminder that you have had this experience. And it's also, you know, with the pressures on society and social media and how we look and how we're supposed to look, you know, as a female as well, and as a 17-year-old female going through that. Like, I'll be completely honest, that the physical element affected my mental element. Like, I didn't want to go to the beach. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want people staring at me. I didn't want to be asked questions. That post-treatment from the first year, I just felt like I wanted to hide away. I just didn't want the questions and the explanations, because people are curious. And that's fine. Like, that's absolutely fine. But when you're dealing with your internal demons on, you know, how do I now live this life with an arm that is absolutely still there, and so blessed because they were looking at amputation as an option. And so it's like, how do I live with this arm as a physical reminder, an arm that doesn't do the things I used to do? Like, I used to play tennis, I used to play netball. Like, how do I recreate this life, you know, with an arm and learn that this is who I am now moving forward? And it's been a huge journey. Like, even now in my 30s, I'm only just coming into accepting my body. And I know for a lot of women that's stock standard. You know, we're constantly worried about, are we good enough? And not just for myself, but, you know, even when I started dating and that sort of thing, it's like, how do I tell this person? Are they going to accept me? Are they going to like me? Are they going to, you know, so you've constantly got these thoughts in your head. And so for me, that's been a huge journey. Like, I would say a 10-year journey to really learn to love myself and love my arm and not hide it. Like, now I can walk in a shop with a singlet and I don't feel like I've got hundreds of eyes on me. I'm just like, this is me, deal with it. Like, I can go to the beach. Yeah, I'm physically like owning it. Like, there are times that I struggle because, you know, simple things like getting up on a chair and changing a light bulb, I can't do. And, you know, there's things like even changing out of clothes, sometimes I struggle. So there's still the daily elements that are reminding me, but I also have that, I suppose, more mature adult sense of mind now that my 17-year-old self didn't. And that just comes with growth and acceptance. So now I'm like, this is my arm, this is how it is. Like, my scars are just a story, and not to be like ashamed of them. Like, this is just who I am. And the same like with your mastectomy, it's just, for a while, you're right, it makes you feel like this is who I am, but at the end of the day, it's about just learning to, like, the acceptance, I think, is the hugest thing for me, because it just, once you accept it, it feels like you're just free. Like, you're free from everything that you've been holding on to. And as I said, it's only been in probably the last couple of years that I've really been honestly been able to say that I'm free from this constant reminder. It's just, like, I don't even think of it. Don't get me wrong, I have my days where I'm like, oh, I just want to be able to hit a tennis racket or do this. But then I'm like, wow, I can do all these other things. So, yeah, you just have to remind yourself, like, what you can't do, there's so many things you can.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I couldn't wear my prosthesis for months and months and months because I had this ongoing saga with one of the drain scars, basically, because it just wouldn't heal. And then because I had the chemo and radiation and all of this, and if you find medical things a bit squeamish, it's probably not the story.
No, I work in medical insurance, so I'm all open.
And so it just wouldn't heal, and it ended up a hole. And so I had this hole under my arm, and it ended up being fixed. So thankfully. But what it meant was for a very long time, I couldn't wear a proper bra because of that area. And so I just, from very early on after my breast being removed, I think I just got the fuck it and went, I'm just going to go out and have one boob and people have problems. That's their problem, not mine. And then sometimes I think it's kind of like being a walking public health reminder of go get your mammogram. Yeah, but I understand. I mean, I'm not saying I'm like that all the time. Sometimes I do feel self-conscious, but I think you're right. It is this part that you sort of have to, yeah, face and decide, how do I approach this and how do I get to a point where, yeah, I can be okay with this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a journey. And I suppose that's also a misconception, is that, you know, as soon as you walk out of that door and, you know, your specialist has said you're in remission, you know, that's not the closing of your door to the journey of cancer. It's lifelong. And whether it's mental, whether it's physical for you, and then you're also like going into journeys with your own like family and friends who've got cancer. Like I mentioned to you, I recently lost my mum. And so that was a huge journey, not only because you'd been through it, but also watching someone that you loved with every inch of your body like go through that. And so in hindsight, that my journey helped like her journey, but it also makes it so much more painful when you physically know what that person is experiencing in some ways, the pain and the sadness and the thoughts of, you know, death and having to be real and face it. And my mum was an extremely brave and powerful person. And I think her experiencing as a mother looking after a child with cancer, not just once, but twice, like I feel really gave her the drive for the, like, she was diagnosed and within less than a year she was gone, but she never complained. She never, and I think her experiences with me gave her that inner strength, and she knew that she was going to be okay no matter where she ended up. And even the doctors at the end said, we've never met such like a brave woman who her priorities were her children before her. And I think my experience had like gave her that inner strength. And so I think that's a misconception as well with people, is that once the door closes to the hospital doesn't mean the door closes for everything else that we go through. And, you know, for some people it can be years and years of constant reminders, or almost that survivor's guilt as well. And that's something I wanted to bring up as well. It's like you have this almost expectation and pressure that you should be bouncing around and then being, oh, I'm grateful. And as much as you want to, and you are, like in your heart of hearts, you are so grateful that you are here. You're also looking and thinking, well, you know, why did that friend, you know, didn't make it through? Or why did my mum not go through it? And so sometimes, you know, that survivor guilt is really real. And I think that's something I really want to put out there, is that it's okay. It sounds cliche. It's okay not to be okay. And we don't have to be constantly convincing people or putting it out there that, yes, we've had cancer, so we should be living this life where we're out there living, you know, the world and doing everything, because it happened to us and it's real. And if I want to have the day where I'm not so grateful, that's okay. Like, I don't have to be 24/7. I'm so blessed to be here. Like, you know, I have my days and I'm real. I'm still a person. And that's not just for cancer. It's for anything that anyone experiences. Yeah, it's okay to have that moment where you're just like, I am angry. Like, I want to feel this. Why did this happen to me? Why did it happen to my friends? And it's okay. You feel it and then you move on. But I think survivor's guilt is something that just no one talks to you about.
Yeah, I so relate to it. And I was thinking, actually, after the first time that we spoke, and I was thinking about this afterwards, because you'd shared that your mother had gone through cancer and that you took a good amount of time off work. And I was thinking, I love that, because it's just like what you're saying, that we don't give people the time and space to grieve. We just sort of expect it to be like, oh yeah, they might still be a bit sad, but come on, like, you got to get on with life. I just feel like we don't understand that grief can actually just be life-altering and lifelong. It doesn't mean that that person can't re-engage and enjoy life at a point, but it does mean that they have experienced a loss, and actually there may be some time where they need to be really tender with themselves. And so I think the fact that you took the time that you needed at that point, yeah, it's admirable. It's a really loving thing to do for yourself. Because a lot of people would just be like, right, I'm going to take my 2 weeks off and then go back to work and get on with things. Yeah.
And I think like grief in itself, it doesn't have to be like a physical grief of a person. Like I feel like in regards to cancer, like for you, it could be the loss of like my breast or the loss of the ability of movement. Or I feel like for cancer patients as well, it's grieving that time you lost. Like your life, you had 1 to 2 years of your life almost taken from you. So for me, grief isn't just necessarily the physical loss of a human. You know, grief could be the loss, as I said, of all these experiences. Like I lost part of my childhood. I lost part of my teenagehood. You know, my friends were going off in parties and I was sitting in a hospital bed throwing up. So I feel like with grief, we always sort of look at it from the terms of a memorial or passing away. But I think as like people who've been through cancer, the loss is huge in so many other ways. And so, yeah, I just feel like it'd be so nice to just get that out there, because as I said, it losing my mum as much as it broke me, and that's why I took the time, and I was just so blessed to have such an amazing company I worked for who allowed me to have that time, because I didn't know who I was without my mum. You know, it's the person that sat beside me when I was sick for, you know, a huge 4 years of my life in two different periods, and that's the person that brought me into life. So who am I without this person? So it wasn't just a loss of a mother, it was the loss of someone who also had been through something I had been through and didn't make it. And so for me, like you said, at the time I was, should I be doing this? Because you're right, everybody has a say on how you should process things, how you should feel. And I understand where people are coming from. I understand they want to help. They think, you know, you sitting in a pile of tears is not going to help. But let the person deal with it the way that they need to, because there's no right or wrong. And that's what I've learned. And I think that's the same with someone grieving the loss of a breast or the loss of an arm or the loss of time. Like, let the person feel what they want to feel. And when they're ready, you know, then they will grow from it. And I just feel like that's something also lacking. Like, we, as I said, we close the door from our doctor, but where's the support? Like, you know, no one said to me as a child, oh, when you're 17 or 18, like I went into some really dark times where like it all hit me at once, like the realization that, hey, I've been through all of this, because you're on adrenaline, like you're fighting for your life, you have to put one foot in front of the other. So then when it all stops, it's like, okay, so what next? And it all hits you at once. Whoa, I've actually just been through this humongous experience. And it can lead to depression. And I can remember times where like I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And that's really real. But I feel like where's that after support of anyone, whether it's cancer, whether it's heart attack, like any type of disease or something you've experienced, like where's that after support? I mean, I'm so blessed that I had Child Cancer Foundation, I had Canteen, and Canteen had some really amazing programs which help you deal with those emotions as well, and lots of group chats and that sort of thing. But if you don't know where to look, or you don't know, yeah, I find that quite upsetting in a world where mental health is so huge at the moment. Where is the mental health for the people who've gone through such, you know, physical health?
There's none. There really isn't, because I didn't even realise that the rates of PTSD for people who've gone through cancer is higher than people who are in the armed forces and gone to active war. You know, you've covered it and explained it so well that we, the general population, doesn't understand. Yeah, when we get signed off by the doctor, I've always said that's when the hard work actually really started, because, you know, you're gluing yourself back together, but you actually don't know who you are anymore. And everything around you is the same, but you are so different that it's like, well, how do I even learn how to relate to the world? because,
you're so saying it and you're saying everything I feel right now. Absolutely. And it's also, like you said, it's discovering who am I. And I feel like I've been through so many experiences. My vision of the world just really changed. And I really struggled to get back into social side of it because I felt like the world was so small compared to the world I'd been part of. Like I had been part of other people's journeys with cancer. I had seen like young children who are so brave. Like children just blow me away. Like they're a next level when it comes to cancer. Like I feel like sometimes as adults, we could really learn from these like beautiful young souls because they have a fight in them. Like we complain about the smallest things and yet you see a child fighting for their life and they have a face. And to me, that is just worth more than anything. But yeah, I just feel like I really struggled because I had such a deep, like I'm an empath and I feel things so hard. I feel the emotions of people. If someone's telling me a story, I feel it so personally. And I felt like I'd come back into this world and I almost felt like, oh my gosh, this world has become so shallow. Like this bubble that I've been in and I've been let out into it. I was like, I don't want to be part of this, you know, like I've been through so much and watched so much pain of other people. I just felt like everyone else's things that, and don't get me wrong, everybody's journeys are their own. Like no one's journey is bigger or smaller than mine. But the things that we worry about in life and that we complain about, and as I said, to them might be so big, just seem so small. And I really struggled to interact and sit in conversations and people are going on about, oh my gosh, my hair didn't turn out this way, or, you know, like, I didn't do this, or, oh my gosh, this guy, like, ghosted me, and, like, and, yeah, it's real, and I totally get that, but I felt like, where do I fit in? Because I was just like, oh my gosh, let's just rewind here. Like, yeah, I really, and even to this day, I struggle. Sometimes I just don't shake people, and I'm like, yes, your stuff is real. I'm going to listen to you. I'm here for you. But come on, guys. Like, let's keep it real. There are so many bigger things in the universe, not just cancer, but in general, that, you know? So I just found, for me personally, like, coming back into the world, yeah, I was a different person. And I felt like I had moved on from a lot of the world that I used to be part of. And I still struggle sometimes, but I just have to remember, Susan, this is their journey. Your journey is yours and theirs is theirs. And, like, we're all important in that bigger scheme. Yeah.
It's such a good way to put it. And, yeah, because I struggle too. Like, I mean, I still struggle with social stuff because I feel like it's almost like I've forgotten how to interact with people. And then we had the pandemic and so we weren't seeing people. It's just like... I have no social skills anymore.
Oh, you'll get there, hun. You'll get there. You're doing this and this is amazing.
Oh, thank you. So I feel like this is a really good place to sort of wrap up. But before we do, I like asking people this because this has intrigued me for a while because I have no idea what it really means either. But what does cancer survivorship mean to you?
I spent a lot of time last night looking at that word survivorship and I was sort of like, how do you put words into what survivorship means? Because we're all surviving, you know, whether we've had cancer or not. Like every day we wake up, we're taking one step forward. And so for me, that sort of explains survivorship is the moving forward, the acceptance. Survivorship doesn't necessarily mean to me like surviving through something. Like, yes, I'm here, I'm grateful. But I think for me, I feel it sounds really cheesy and I feel like it's a duty for myself that me going through this experience, and I've only just, as I said, come to terms with it and acceptance in it. You know, I've been going through the hospital system for over 30 years. And I think acceptance is a huge word, like, for me. Because acceptance is, like, a word saying, okay, I own what I've been through and I'm now ready to move on. And so for me, being 39, nearly 40, it's taken me 30 years to say that word acceptance. So to me, that is survivorship. That's me being whole in my whole person, my my experiences, my losing my mother, like the pain, everything. It's just all wrapped up and I'm like, it's acceptance. And so I think for me, that's what survivorship means. It's that one step in front of it, the other, and that's all you can do. Because even though I've accepted it now, it's still, I think my whole life, there's still going to be that growth and that journey. And I think I owe it to myself and to my mother, bless her, to do that. And I think, I feel like you were brought to me at a time. Your pop-up on my Facebook was just when my mother had passed. Or just about to pass. And I remember just like saying to her, oh my gosh, Ram, I've like discovered this, because I really feel, you know, there's not a lot out there in New Zealand. I've reached out to Australia. There's a really great, another podcast called Good Morning, and it's about mourning. And so, yeah, like finding someone else was just mind blowing. And at the time I wasn't ready to do my podcast, but now I've done my grief and my acceptance. And so, yeah, I just feel like people are put in your path for reasons, and I think acceptance for me is a big word for survivorship.
Ah, I love that. And what a beautiful note to wrap up on as well, because I think that is, yeah, such a powerful message. So thank you. Thank you for being open to meeting
me. Oh, my gosh. Thank you for just allowing me to talk and having, you know, that voice. And I think in New Zealand, the more we can get it out there, the more people are going to accept it's out there. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we're aware, the more we're going to be mindful of our own bodies, the more we'll be able to support someone, you know, if they do go through it. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM, and anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word.
Call me by by surprise. I let my guard down. I hope everybody knows that I wanna love you and show you what's mine is yours. You're the only love my heart has ever known. So, baby, can you turn me on?
So you can find your way, but you are a fool. All the leaves are soaked in kerosene. You had it all, you got to live the dream, and you knew it, but you blew it, because you burned it all down. You burned it all down. Oh, you, do you need to burn to feel? Do you need to feel to know? Do you need to know that you're real? Who are you now? Who, different sky. There may be hope, but you're too scared to try. You've been through it, can't undo it, because you burned it all down. You burned it all down.
Keeping my head down while I figure out where it is I sit in the crowd, and I'm trying not to focus on the notes and the papers, instead relying on the kind words of a stranger. And in the moment when I really started a doubt of myself. See a message that you sent to my private account. I guess you didn't stop to think of how your words would sound in the head of a girl who's trying to figure it out. Then my friend sent me a poster, gloated, even toast yourself on what you said as alcohol filled your head. And what's worse, you couldn't speak up when you were sober. I guess you get your courage from your Red Bull and vodka. Oh, my path at my own damn pace. Small stuff like water off a dark speck, but let me remind you that sticks and stones may break my bones, and your words may kill me, cause I got insecurities. You're not the type of person that I need. I'm not Iron Man with a suit to protect me. I'm just your average girl with her heart on her sleeve. So you're just gonna keep hating me, and we're just gonna be enemies. But don't you think the world could be a little less mean with a little more love and sincerity? Oh, at my own damn pace. Too cold. I need the sunshine.
take your vote if you don't get the cabin. The wicked witch is coming from the west to hatch your plan. You see the future, what you read between the lines. So they paint a pretty picture and then cover it with lies. Since it's no telephone, we'll never be the same. In a state of being grateful, I could never feel ashamed. Situation grave, an ultimatum on its way. Your mind is still based on principle. And if you know, you know. You know, oh, now you know, baby. And if you know, you know. You don't know, oh, it's too cold. And if you know, you know. And if you know, you know, you don't know what to call.
You. dum 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 dum. I already told you once before, don't leave a message at the tone. I don't wanna hear your voice no more. I don't wanna break up on the phone. I don't really care if I am wrong, 'cause I'm all good at on my own.
But I don't want somebody that don't want me. So go and do your thing. You say you wanna be free. Well, I know my worth and know I ain't come cheap. So I ain't selling up short if you count it for me. I'm cute and I'm way up, got my pay up. They wanna shoot that shot like a layup. I will never fight for you, but good luck, boo. I hit a pretty new scoop with the up to it. Yo,
you told me.